You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Despite NATO's plan to withdraw combat troops from Afghanistan by the end of 2014, fighting continues, and people living in the country's outlying communities face constant danger. Najib Khaja gave cell phones with cameras to civilians living in rural areas and had them film their daily lives. The footage, which includes both mundane and terrifying aspects of Afghan life, is collected in Mr. Khaja's film, My Afghanistan, Life in the Forbidden Zone. It's being shown tonight at 6:30 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center. It's part of the Human Rights Film Festival. I'm very pleased that it has brought Najib Khaja to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
The film opens in Copenhagen. Are you a Danish citizen?
Yes, I am. I'm born in Denmark. I have Afghan parents who fortunately immigrated to Denmark before the first war broke out in Afghanistan.
That's when the Russians, the Soviet Union, invaded?
Yes, yes.
Would people in Afghanistan regard you as one of their own or as a European?
Actually, you know, when people, they just meet me, At first hand, you know, they just, you know, get the impression that I'm Afghan like them. And I speak Dari, but still I don't speak it on a very high level. So when I have a conversation with people, after approximately a few minutes, they discover that something is lacking. And then they ask me, you know, where I'm from, and they can't make things, you know, it doesn't make sense for them. So I tell them that I'm actually from Denmark, and then they start to regard me as a foreigner, actually.
And you don't speak Pashto either?
No, I don't.
What part of Afghanistan did you go to? The film opens in an airport, and you're flying to Afghanistan.
Yeah. Actually, the whole reason for why I made the movie was because I was tired of Afghanistan only being perceived from the bigger cities, and we weren't seeing anything from the rural areas. And when we saw pictures from the rural areas, it was always, you know, journalists or filmmakers embedded with the military, Western military. So you know, the information we received was filtered, because when you're embedded with the military, there are a lot of restrictions. So I wanted to do a movie about the rural areas and the war-torn areas. So I went to Helmand in southern Afghanistan. That's one of the most war-torn areas in Afghanistan.
And one with a strong Taliban presence. Your friend tells you that if you walk in any direction, you're going to come into contact with the Taliban.
Yes, yes, because, you know, in Helmand, the Afghan government, they control the province capital, Lashkargar, where we are in the movie. But if you go out of Lashkargar, you can encounter the Taliban almost everywhere.
Early in the film, you're in a Danish airport bookstore, and you're looking at books about the war in Afghanistan written by Americans and Europeans. And you say, what we forget is this conflict the people are just trying to lead their lives while war literally rages in their back gardens. Are you disappointed by the way the war is portrayed in the Western media, or would it be possible for the Western media to understand it any better, considering the fact that you couldn't go into this area with your camera? You had to have other people do it.
I'm very much frustrated because of the coverage of the war, and indignated. And that's the reason why I made the movie. And the thing is that, you know, the Afghans, they've not been portrayed as whole human beings. They've been stereotyped, and sometimes, you know, they get portrayed as victims or as oppressors. I wanted to show them as three-dimensional figures, and I think it is possible to do it. In the movie, I don't go out to, for example, the rural areas, but I think if you use alternative methods, it is possible to get in touch with the right persons.
Well, at one point, the Afghan police questioned you about why you're holding a camera. Did you ever feel threatened while you were making your part of the film?
Occasionally, I feel threatened in Afghanistan. I feel threatened by insurgents. You know, I've unfortunately, you know, I also experienced to be kidnapped in 2008 by Taliban insurgents. I was lucky to escape from them, and nothing happened to me. And I've also experienced to be arrested by Afghan police twice, actually. So it is a very difficult country to work in, especially if you want to be independent.
So you found these people who were willing to film for you. Was it dangerous for them?
You know, from in some circumstances, it was dangerous for them. You know, for example, I told them not to film any armed groups, parties of the war, but they did, some of them, even though I advised them not to do it. But, you know, but their lives are dangerous, whether they are contributing to the movie or not. They live in war zones, so some of the things that has been filmed, it's situations that would happen anyway.
Well, you said that you want them to film their everyday lives, but you also tell them you don't want just images of cows and birds.
Yeah.
And they came through for you, although in some cases it was rather difficult. Are mobile devices and cameras common in rural Afghanistan when they're holding them up to film? Would people just think this is something that was normal?
Yeah, because the reason why I chose to use mobile phones as instruments was because it's not actually normal to have video cameras in rural areas. So if I sent somebody out with a video camera, then people, they could start to accuse them of spying or whatever. But mobile phones have become so common in rural Afghanistan that nobody thinks about it, you know, when somebody walks around and films. And they've all, you know, a lot of people from the villages, they've started to film each other, you know, before I came, just for, you know, private usage. So it was just, you know, a continuation of that process.
Well, you were paying these people, and I get the feeling that they might not have participated if they didn't need the money that bad. Many of them are really struggling just to survive. How did you find the five that you got?
Yeah, I wanted to compensate for the time that they spent on the project, because they took off from work and they traveled a lot, because they had to travel back and forth between the provincial capital where I was residing and their home villages. So I thought that it was ethically wrong that I actually received salary for making this movie, but 80% of the pictures, actually, it's there. Pictures. So I thought that it was fair to pay them, and also because they needed to get paid to take time off.
Well, you had to edit out stuff. How much footage did you wind up getting? How did they even get it to you?
It was actually a very manual process, because you don't have internet access in these areas. Many of the areas, you don't even have a mobile phone connection, you know. So actually, I was waiting in Lashkargar, so I sent them out, and they filmed, and then they came back and handed me the memory cards. You know, and then I took the memory cards with me to Denmark, so it was very manually.
And you must have been thrilled by some of the footage you got. I'm sure surprised as well.
I have a journalistic background, so I'm very much focused on the conflict and war and all these things and negative aspects of life in war-torn areas. So I was very much surprised, you know, actually by all the pictures that showed, you know, the good sides of the life, all the positive things in their lives. I was very much amazed by how they were coping with actually living in a war zone and actually not only surviving but also trying to enjoy life.
My guest is Naguib Khaja, whose film My Afghanistan, Life in the Forbidden Zone, is playing tonight at 6:30 at the Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center as part of the Human Rights Film Festival. Out of the five participants, only one, Nargis, is a woman. Did you have a hard time finding women who would participate?
It was very difficult, especially because we hear that Afghanistan is a very conservative country, but still, Helmand is more conservative than Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan. And I'm not just in Helmand, I'm outside in the rural areas. So it's kind of, you know, 300% more conservative than Kabul. So it's very difficult for people just to work with foreigners or to contribute to news reports, for example, without being accused of spying for foreign forces. So to work with a woman, that's extremely difficult.
Well, does Afghan culture restrict women from appearing on camera? The youngest participant, Shukrula, says that he can't film his mother and his older sister.
Yeah, in rural areas, it does, actually. They don't take pictures of their female family members, or they don't show the pictures to other people. And if they get filmed, you know, there's a risk of the pictures being showed to people who's not in the family, and, you know, they can be dishonored, and it can have big consequences for their social lives.
Although that wasn't a problem for Nargis, the woman, she could show other women.
She could show other women, but still, you know, the process was restricted to her, to the nearest family members. So in the movie, you also see that she can barely film outside of her yard, actually. So all the footage that she has is inside the yard.
The people who were older had lost their spouses in almost every case. How many people are widows and widowers in Afghanistan? Is that the norm?
There are a lot of people who are widows or widowers, either because that their spouses have been killed in the war, or because of the very terrible health situation in Afghanistan. The average lifespan is very low in Afghanistan. You know, people they die, you know, before they get 50. Most of the Afghans.
One of the younger people, Jonah Gulm, is a construction worker. And he's a character. He addresses the audience as dear viewer most of the times when he speaks. He saw this as an opportunity to become a filmmaker in his own right.
Yeah. And it was actually one of the premise of the movie, that I wanted them to do the film like they wanted to do it. I wanted them to use the methods they wanted to. Of course, I showed them how to film. I told them they could film themselves, holding the camera out, you know, in front of themselves. They could film other people. They could get the family members to film them. But still, I wanted them to do it, you know, in a spirit, you know, that pleased them. And Juma Gul, he really took advantage of it, you know, in his own way, and actually acted like a news presenter in almost all the clips.
He even does a thing where he combs his hair, talks about his hairstyle as he's looking in a mirror. How much, but he's talking to an international audience in his mind. How much do these people know about the world outside their rural villages and outside Afghanistan?
People in the rural areas in Afghanistan, they don't know that much about life outside of Afghanistan, you know. If you ask people, you know, where, for example, New York is or United States on a map, they can't find it because there are a lot of people who are illiterate in Afghanistan.
I recently spoke to somebody who'd written a book about weavers in Afghanistan. And when she went to their small village, at some point she said, did you hear that Osama bin Laden has just been killed? And they said, who's Osama bin Laden? And this was in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's true. We've had a military presence in Afghanistan in many years now, and actually many of the places that American and Danish and, you know, foreign forces are fighting, some of the people that they're fighting, actually, these people, they don't know anything about the World Trade Center. So that's the kind of, tragical perspective of this war, actually.
We see a lot of children in the film. At one point, some are playing Taliban. Like, I guess that's like cops and robbers. And then in another, they're playing with a machete. Are these normal forms of play for Afghan children?
You know, children, they get influenced by the environment. And obviously, war is a part of the environment. So when they play police officers and robbers here in New York, in Afghanistan, it's Taliban and government forces, you know. And security is something that they have a very light relation to in Afghanistan. There's also a scene with one of the characters actually driving a car without brakes, and he has all his children in the car, and
he has to stop going up a hill.
Yeah,
he says his cab is an old person, and it should be treated with the kind of respect that an old person has.
Yeah, and exempted from regulation because it's an old person.
But the kids, of course, also, they have to worry about landmines, and there's a scene where some goats have been killed because they walked on landmines. And then in another scene, there are children who are hiding inside a house, and a mother puts her hands over her baby's ear so he won't hear the noise of all the fighting outside, the bombs.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, you know, the war has had consequences, not only physically but also mentally, for a big part of the population. And in Afghanistan, for example, you don't have, you know, psychological treatment for people. I would say that, you know, a very large part of the country have been traumatized by, you know, constant war for the past 30 years.
How often were the participants threatened by the attacks? Because you don't get a sense of who is attacking in some of those scenes. They're hiding, but I wasn't sure whether it was because NATO troops were firing their guns, or whether the Taliban were firing their guns. Who was dropping mortar shells nearby?
In some of the scenes where you had some fighting, some of the most severe fighting in the movie, it's actually mostly NATO and Afghan government forces firing towards the house where the family lives because they think that the Taliban are present there, even if they've left. So actually, you know, the insurgents, they don't use that much firepower. They attack and they run. You know, that's their tactics. So most of the time, actually, it's actually the foreign forces and the Afghan government firing.
A girl laments that she has to watch the sheep because there's no one else to watch them. She would much prefer to go to school.
Yeah, and it's a very good example that even though if you are a small, very young farmer girl, you have dreams, you have expectations, and it's not just enough, you know, sometimes with the living standard that they have. They aspire to achieve more, actually. And Afghans, they have dreams, they have hopes, like we have up here too. And it's very important for me to emphasize it in the movie.
And we get that sense from Shukrullah, the student who films for you, who has to really struggle to get to school every day. And near the end of the film, he goes missing. How long was it before you were able to make contact with him again?
It was actually a bit more than a week because there was a military offensive and it was British forces trying to get rid of Taliban insurgents in an area. And, you know, and the mobile connection is very bad. It was very bad at that time. So I couldn't get in touch with him because there were no connection. And it was terrible, you know, to know that there was a war, you know, battles happening in his village without you being able to do anything.
So you had no idea whether he, in fact, had survived.
Yeah, no.
But you do end the film with him, so we're all a bit relieved. What's your sense of what will happen when the NATO troops have all left? Did the people that you talked to even think along those lines?
They do. And most of the Afghans, of course, they hope for peace. You know, they've been wishing and hoping for peace for many years. But there are two possibilities right now. If the world community, you know, I'm thinking about United Nations and the powerful nations in the world, doesn't go in and try to, you know, help a peace process, you know, toward the straight path, on the right track, sorry. I think either it will escalate the conflict because there will be a balance between the Afghan government and the Taliban or and other insurgents because NATO is not supporting the Afghan government as much, or the insurgents, they will lose a lot of people because most of the people who joined the insurgent groups, they did it because they wanted to fight the foreign forces. So if the foreign forces, they leave, there is a chance, hopefully, that they will lose power.
We see kids throwing rocks over a wall because the American troops are going by on the other side.
Yeah, and this is quite normal. In the rural areas, in opposite of the cities, people have experienced very severe consequences of the Western military presence. So they're not happy about the Western military presence. And you know, the soldiers, the Western soldiers who's down there, they're very young. They don't understand the language. It's difficult for them to communicate with Afghans. And they sometimes treat, you know, all kinds of people, civilians also, as enemies because they're afraid of getting hurt.
Just one more thing. Denmark has sent troops. Yeah. How has this film been shown in Denmark yet?
It has. It has been screened in Denmark, and it
what
was.
What has been the response?
It had a fantastic, positive response. You know, I was very surprised, and actually, the best response I got was from soldiers who had been in Helmand. I had several emails, very warm mails from soldiers who told me that I actually showed a part of Afghanistan that they didn't experience when they were down there because they were in these protective hubs in the bases.
Naguib Khaja, his film My Afghanistan, Life in the Forbidden Zone, plays tonight at 6:30 at the Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center. That's up in Lincoln Center. It's being shown as part of the Human Rights Film Festival. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.